So we should remember that I said that I hope you had a nice Hanukkah vacation. We're up to chapter 4. Now I think that I have made a decision that we're going to go straight through, even to give you some outline of that there are chapters that deal with the construction of the Beit HaMikdash, which are not simple by any stretch of the imagination, but at least in some kind of a limited way we could discuss it, but that'll take us a while till we get there yet. And the reason why I made that decision is because a number of the chapters that we're going to come to in the next few weeks are chapters that are also haftarot. Some are occasionally read, others are read rarely. The haftarot of Parashat Truma, Tetzaveh, Vayakel, Pekudei, all of those, or a number of those haftarot in the second part of Sefer Shemot that deal with the construction of the Mishkan, the haftorahs are taken from the early chapters here in Malachim, so it's worthwhile looking at them. Meanwhile, let's begin with chapter 4. We were up to chapter 4. And while it may seem that chapters 4, 5, 6 seem to be giving us very mundane kind of information, I don't think we should ever take anything in Tanakh as being mundane. It's not a word you can use about a pasuk in Tanakh. There's something that we are being told. So, genug introduction. Chapter 4 begins with Vayihi HaMelech Shlomo Melech Al Kol Yisrael. Shlomo was king over all of Israel. Does that come as any news to you? Alright, so we have to figure out what does the pasuk mean here, especially in view of the fact that we've been told it twice in the past. In chapter 2, where's my note? In chapter 2, take a look in chapter 2, pasuk 12. Chapter 2, pasuk 12 says, Ushlomo yashav al kisei David aviv, and Shlomo sat on the throne of his father David, batikon malchuto miod, and his kingdom was very established. Let's take a look in the same chapter, the last pasuk in chapter 2, pasuk 46. It's a long chapter. Vayitzav hamelech et beno Yehu ben Yehoyada vayetze vayivga bo vayod. The king commanded beno Yehu ben Yehoyada. He went out and he ran him through and he died. He tells him to kill Shimi ben Gera. Vahamamlacha nachona biyad Shlomo. And the kingdom is established in the hands of Shlomo. So here in chapter 2, we've already been told twice that Shlomo is king over all of Israel. So what is it that is being said different or new or unique? What's being added when it says now for the third time, Vayihi HaMelech Shlomo Melech Al Kol Yisrael? Shlomo was king over all of Israel. So we've heard already, who was it? Somebody said the pshat that it may very well be that what is being added here is Kol Yisrael, over all of Israel. Go ahead. Yes?
One has to do with military. The other one has to do with internal politics. And now it has to do probably with the rest of Bani Israel in terms of spiritually that everybody's expecting.
All right. Very good. Let's take each one of them individually. Each one represents, Sora is saying that each one represents a stage in the development of his kingdom or in the acceptance thereof. The first one says, Shlomo yashav al kisei David aviv. Shlomo sat on the throne of his father. By the way, in that pasuk, he is not referred to as king. He's called Shlomo. In the pasuk that we start our chapter with, he is referred to Vayihi HaMelech Shlomo. That means in that first pasuk over there in chapter 2, he's not yet king, but he is assuming the throne. And what's really represented in that first pasuk is he is becoming king by virtue of the fact that he is the son of David. Does not yet in any way speak of Shlomo as king. Or is there something that he has done that has made him king? He sits upon the throne of David, and his malchus is established. On what foundation? On the foundation of his being the son of David.
What about 28?
Very good. There you go. Good. That's going to be the third step. The second time it says it, at the end of chapter 2, V'hamam lochona chona biyad Shlomo, the kingdom is established in the hand of Shlomo, because what did he do in that chapter? He removed those who were threats to the kingdom. He rewarded those who were friends. So now already, the mamlacha is nachona, the kingdom is established in the hands of Shlomo. It's no longer Shlomo who is the son of David. It is now Shlomo in his own right, because he has taken very, very crucial, serious, and decisive steps. But that still doesn't make him a king, and that doesn't make him a king over all of Israel. Do you know what does? The Mishpat. The Mishpat. After the two women come before him, and then it becomes known in all of Israel, the wisdom of Shlomo, then two things happen. He's not Shlomo anymore. That's really what he was in the two previous psukim that we mentioned. He wasn't referred to as King Shlomo. He's young. I don't know precisely how old Machloket was. He's someplace between age 12 studying his Haftorah or age 20. If he's getting ready for the Bar Mitzvah, or maybe he's getting ready to get married. He is young. So he's Shloimele. You know how it is when a new Rebbe takes over, or a new, somebody new takes over. So he's the kid. After the Mishpat and after the dream in which God appears to him in Givon and tells him that he's going to give him a heart full of justice and understanding, then he already assumes now a title of his own, no longer dependent upon his father. And not only is it no longer dependent on his father, now he becomes king over all of Israel. In the other two psukim, it had spoken about his mamlocha, his kingship. In other words, wasn't it Alexander Haig who said, it's okay, I'm in charge here. It's the attempted assassination of Reagan by whom? Hinckley. How quickly we forget. Hinckley. Yeah. I'm in charge here. In the first two psukim, it's a sense of I am in charge here. It does not reflect how does the rest of the country look at him. And that's what the pasuk now says. It is his wisdom. Not his strong arm. Not the hand of Shlomo that strikes down those who are a threat to him. Not the Shlomo who has a pedigree that he is the son of David, but Shlomo, the Chachmat Shlomo, the Chachmat Elokim in him. Therefore, he is now referred. He is called Hamelech Shlomo, King Shlomo. Yes.
Could it also be the second
That's also true. That's also true. He was finishing off what his father had told, so he's still acting over there as the son of the great father. And it's now that he is acting as an individual, where he strikes out on his own. Tov miyod. See, ten lechacham v'yech kamal. Very good. Okay, you get a good mark for that. Yes?
How big is Israel?
Oh, very good question. Very good question. The reason why it's a very good question is because that's going to appear in chapter 5, which means the quicker I can get through with chapter 4, the quicker I will be able to demonstrate it, and it's going to be very important. Very important to know, number one, how big Israel itself was, and number two, how great its influence or its power was. We're going to find out that Israel was a superpower of such awesome proportions. In this chapter, we're going to find out the extent of Eretz Yisrael proper, but beyond Eretz Yisrael itself, there was great influence, an influence that was the result of strength and wisdom. Watch. Now, what's going to happen in this chapter is a listing of people, a list, a pashut, a list, Allah. That's all. Rishimat Shlomo, Shlomo's list of officers, governors, the ones who are in charge of different parts of the country in order to collect the taxes. Ve'ela ha'sodim ha'shalom, but not only taxes, we'll see there, also his cabinet. We were told of the cabinet of David earlier in Shmuel. There's an expanded cabinet now. This is already an answer to your question. There's an expanded cabinet now because there is an expanded Eretz Yisrael. There are greater responsibilities that Shlomo carries upon his shoulders than David did. The only thing I don't find over here is a minister for internal security. I don't know. That they didn't have. That may have to wait for another time. But it says, Ve'ela ha'sarim ha'shalom. These are the officers that were unto him. Azaryahu ben Tzadik ha'kohen. Azaryahu, the son of Tzadik ha'kohen. Now, what's very fascinating is he's the only one who, about whom we are not told what was his purpose, what was his what office was he in charge of, what was his tafkid. The others you will see, Elichodev va'achia b'nei Shisha, who were the Sofrim. And by the way, Sofrim over here does not have the limited meaning that it usually has of scribes. We're not talking about court reporters. Sofrim represent those who were in charge of keeping the records of the kingdom. We're talking about the archives, more than the archives. We're talking about all of the massive paperwork of the government, the ones who were, and it's more. They may also have been part of the inner cabinet of the king.
If I go over back there, I'm sorry,
the only thing is, there are different, he's not the Kohen, because Tzadok really is the Kohen, not Azaryahu. Now he could be, according to some of Farshim, he is the son of Tzadok HaKohen, and according to others, the word HaKohen in a number of places in Tanakh means a man who holds great position. You know where we heard it? Not Kohen Kohen. It says, we learned it in Shmuel Beit, U'b'nei David Kohanim. If I'd have time, I'd find, it says the sons of David were Kohanim. What do you mean they were Kohanim? They weren't Kohanim. David was from Shevet Yehuda. Kohanim also has a broader is a broader term, which means people of leadership. There are many who say that this Azaryahu ben Tzadok was the king's closest advisor, one shot. Another shot, he was the one who was responsible for the functioning of all of those who are mentioned afterwards. Then there was Yehoshaphat ben Achilud HaMazkir. And over here, Mazkir also, you know, Mazkir can mean, you know, the secretary who sits, you know, by the, a typewriter, I mean by the word processor. Or Mazkir HaMedina, the secretary of state, is the Mazkir HaMedina. That's the kind of Mazkir we're talking about. The one who is in charge of matters of state. And is in charge of the army. You see, obviously, when we see Sofrim and Mazkir in this kind of a listing, it can't mean the scribe who does technical work or the Mazkir who's the secretary. We're talking about the top leadership of the country. And the Ramatkal, the commander-in-chief, comes after these. V'tzadok v'Evyatar Kohanim. Tzadok and Evyatar are the real Kohanim who are serving as the spiritual leaders. Azaryahu ben Natam al Hanitzavim. Azaryahu ben Natam is al Hanitzavim. We're going to learn who the Nitzavim are. The Nitzavim, we will see, are people who were appointed over different parts of the country. The ones that I said were going to collect the taxes. Azaryahu ben Natan al Hanitzavim. The Natan here is most probably Natan HaNavi. And then there is Zavud ben Natan, Kohen, Re'e HaMelech, who is the very interesting kind of position. The friend of the king, is that how they say it in the English translation? Private minister of state. Something confidential.
Confidential advisor.
Re'e HaMelech. By David also, there was Hushi ben Arki. There were others who were called Re'e HaMelech, friends of the king.
The kitchen cabinet.
That's right, the inner cabinet. Va'achishar was Al-Habayat in charge of the house. Va'adoniram ben Avdo Al-Amas Adoniram, the son of Avdo, was in charge of the taxation. We're going to talk about Adoniram in a few minutes. I'll get back to Adoniram. But meanwhile, I'm going to finish the chapter so that I can feel at ease that we've finished an entire chapter. V'lishlomo shnei asa nitzavim. Shlomo had 12 nitzavim al kol Yisrael. Nitzavim, people who were appointed over all of Israel. V'chilchilu et hamelech v'et beito, they were the ones who sustained the king and his house, meaning his throne. Chodesh bashona yeh al ha'echad l'chalkel. Each one had the responsibility of sustaining the house of the king for 1 month. In other words, whatever money the king needed for a month, each one provided 1 month's worth. Ve'ele shmota, remember, before we had that, Azaryahu ben Natan is the one who is al ha'nitzavim. He is the one who's in charge of all of these nitzavim, and there are going to be 12 of them. Ve'ele shmotam. Ben Hur, Bahar Ephraim. Ben Hur was Ben Hur. Never thought of it. Ben Hur, Bahar Ephraim. Didn't occur, yeah. The Mefarshim say that when a person is described by his father's name, it's because he was better known by his father's name than by his own name. He alone might have been at the beginning of his stewardship, he was an unknown and known only by virtue of his father. Ele shmotam ben Chur b'har Ephraim, ben Deker b'Makatz u'b'Shalbim u'Beit Shemesh ve'Elon Beit Hanan. Ben Deker. Now, I'm not going to take you through all of the precise geographic locations. What I'm really interested in here is that you get a general picture. Now, when we're talking about Ben Deker in this pasuk, you certainly have an idea what area of the country we're talking about. We're talking about after the Latrun interchange right off Highway 1. So we're talking the area west of there. We're talking about Shalvim, yes, and Beit Shemesh, and Ayalon, right, and whatever Beit Kanan is. So we're talking about from that area to the sea. Ben-Hur, who was in Har Ephraim would be north of that. In other words, Har Ephraim would be part of the part of the Shomron, the western part of the Shomron. The eastern part of the Shomron, we will see, is going to be part of the land of Binyamin. Watch. Ben Chesed was in charge of Arubot, and lo, unto him was Socho, Bechol Eretz Chefer. Okay, where's Eretz Chefer? Emek Chefer? No, tell me where. That's right, near Netanya. It's really north of. No. Netanya. Soho has to be. Soho was. There were a number of important battles that took place at Soho. As it. Yeah, but they start at the. It starts at the sea. It starts at the sea and it goes eastward. You're right. Netanya is part of the Moetzet Shiput of Emek Chefer. All right. To Chadera. All right.
It says
here about 10 miles
Sofo,
about 10 miles southwest of Kabul. On which one? Of Kabul.
On
the
Sofo.
No.
Oh, gosh, that's a different... That's a completely different... That's Taka completely different. Huh? All right, let's see. There is another Soho. There's a Soho where there was a battle that could have been in the area of Hebron. Hebron, let's go. I have some important things to say here. I'm getting moving. Ben Avinadav was in charge of Kol Nofat Dor. He wasn't. Nofat is a word that is used today to sort of an area an area of Shiput is a Nofat. Nofat Dor. So where could Dor have been? South of Haifa. Yeah? The witches of Endor. Where did we learn about the witch of Endor? There was only one witch. That's when Shaul, before he was getting ready to go to battle at Gilboa by Enek Yisrael, he went to the witch of Endor. In other words, we are now north of Chefer. The one before was Chefer. We have now moved north of Chefer. You're going to see this is all going to be very important. There's a tremendous amount of wisdom involved in what Shlomo HaMelech is doing. Tafat bat Shlomo hayta lo leisha. This is a good thing to remember for a Chidon HaTanach. You're not going to have too many names of the daughters of Shlomo, and you're certainly not going to know the names of many of their sons and sons-in-law. This fellow, isn't this terrible? We don't even know what his name is. We don't know what his name is, but we know that he married Tophat, the daughter of Shlomo. Now, I have a feeling that Tophat, the daughter of Shlomo, became his wife later. In other words, it was not a nepotism. Now, if he's a chusin to Shlomo, and then Shlomo gives him the job, that's nepotism. That's already it's nepotism. But what happens if he's appointed first over that area of the country and he does a good job and therefore Shlomo sees fit to have him as a chusin? That's a completely different story. And I think that it's sort of as an afterthought the Pasuk is writing that Tophat, the daughter of Shlomo, was his wife. Was, Haital Lo, became unto him a wife. Bano ben Achilud, Ta'anach u'Megiddo. Now, do you see that we are moving now eastward? We're moving from Haifa eastward, Tanakh, and Megiddo are on the way, are along Emek Yisrael. Bechol Beit Shan, now we're really gone east. Asher Eitzel Sortana, Mitachat Li Yisrael, Mi Beit Shan, Ad Ovel Mechola. We know about all of these places. This is all going across the center of the country to, say, the lower Galilee. Galil Atachton until the Jordan. Ad Me Eva Li Yokna'am. Might be in some way related to Yokna'am. Ben Gever, Beramot Gilad. Ben Gever was in charge of Ramot Gilad, is already the other side of the Jordan. That's the east side of the Jordan. Lo Chavot unto him, he was in charge of Chavot Yair ben Menashe Asher Bagilad, which is in Gilad. Lo Hevel Argov, all of these places are mentioned in Sefer Bamidbar and in Devarim. These were the places that Moshe Rabbeinu conquered from Sichon and Og. To him was Hevel Argov Asher Babashan. At Hargolan, Babashan, we are now moving on the east side of the Jordan, northward. Shishim Odo, Adin Gedolot, 60 big cities, Choma, Uveriach, the Choshet, walled cities with gates that were locked with copper. Achinadav Ben Ido, there wasn't yet another Ido, I don't know if this is. I mean, there's somebody in jail by the name of Ido also. Ido Elbaz, I think, written about the dinner of Rode. Now, Machanaima, where's that? More than Yaakov came to. It's on the eastern side. It has to be on the eastern side. But it's closer to the Jordan. Number one, it was one person's last stop before crossing the Jordan westward, and it was somebody else's last stop after having crossed the Jordan eastward. Did I say westward? Westward, eastward. Yaakov, when he comes from the house of Lavan after the confrontation with Lavan, it says he went from there by Yivgu Bo Malachi Elikim, the last pasuk in Parashat Vayetze. By Yivgu Bo Malachi Elikim, he meets up the angels of God and he said, Machane Elokim said, this is a camp of God. By Yikra Shem Hamakom Hahu, he called the name of that place Machanayim. That was Yaakov who gave it the name. And when David fled from before his son Avshalom, he crossed the Jordan and they came to Machanayim. And I believe it was at Machanayim that Barzilai HaGiladi came with all sorts of, with blankets and food and bread and ta'inim and tamarim and all the rest. So he's in charge of the center section of the east side of the Jordan. Achimatz was in charge of Naphtali. Gamru lakach et Basmat Bat Shlomo Leisha. He took Basmat Bat Shlomo Levisha. I've tried to figure out, but I haven't found anything yet in terms of the difference in the way the two Chassanim are mentioned. One it says Tafat Bat Shlomo Haitalo Levisha, and here it says Lakachet Basmat Bat Shlomo Levisha. I don't know. Yes, so you can be romantics and say that, you know, here this fellow, he took her. And there she was attracted to him. I mean, I'm not sure. But now we know the names of two daughters. We know of Tafat, and we know of Basmat. And one of them, at least, we know his name, that he was Achimatz, and the other was the son of Avinadab. That's in the land of Naphtali. The land of Naphtali should already be north of Haifa.
No, it's
along the coast. But it doesn't go to the
land of Asher is on the coast.
The land of Asher is on the coast.
Who was in the middle and then
that's how all right. Now let me take this. Wait, I have the map too. Why should I trust your map? My map is the same. Asher is the one who's all along the coast. Mamish from Haifa northward. And Nofet Dor, correct, we were correct. It's the Haifa area. Very good. Very good.
But
yes, time, that's true. Time is passing. And these people are most probably going to be in their positions for many years. Many years. This is not these are not people who are
the youngsters of 18 or 20.
Listen, as far as I'm concerned, at 40, he's also a youngster.
So, but the chapter begins that way. It doesn't say he became.
Yes, he was.
And it doesn't say he appointed the princes. These were the princes.
Yes. I'm going to ask you one question when I'm finished reading this. So just prepare yourselves.
The name.
No. Vana ben Hushai Ba'asher Uba Alot. That's along the coast. Yahushaphat ben Paruach is Bi Sakhar. Where is Yisachar? Sure. Yisachar is north of the, just north of Emek Yisrael, above Beit Shan, Tanach, Umikido. Shimi ben Ela is Binyamin. That already takes us now closer to Jerusalem, right? Binyamin is right to the north and to the east of Yerushalayim. Gever ben Udi be'eretz Gilad, and this must be the land of Gilad directly across. If we go straight east from here, Gever ben Udi be'eretz Gilad, eretz Sichon melech Hamori og melech Habashan. And I didn't count them all up. Let me count them. Just one moment. Ben, this is going to be important. Ben Hur, Ben Deker, Ben Chesed, Ben Avinadav, Bana, Ben Gever, Achinadav, Achimatz, Bana, Yehoshaphat, Shimi, Gever ben Uri. Great. Okay. There were 12 whom we are told by name. And the last pasuk says, Unitziv Echad, Asher Baretz, and one appointee, one governor in the land. Who is this mysterious number 13? Oh, that's one shot. It could be the one at the beginning, Azaryahu ben Tzadok, who's in charge of them all. Could be that. Or, and here is something that we've pointed out, I believe, a number of other places in Tanakh, and we will deal with it again here. There is something, a very fascinating kind of structure that one sees in Tanakh. Sometimes words are sort of drawn from one to the other. What's the beginning of the next chapter? The next pasuk. Yehuda v'Yisrael rabim. Yehuda and Yisrael are many. Kachol asher al hayam larov, like the sand by the sea. Ochlim v'shaltim u'smeichim, eating, drinking, and happy. That's quite a pasuk. That's going to be a description of the Jewish people in the times of Shlomo. So, there are those who say that the word Yehuda that is at the beginning of pasuk Aleph also applies to the end of the pasuk before. Unitziv echad asher ba'aretz Yehuda. And then Yehuda v'Yisrael. Now, all of the geographical areas that were mentioned, none of them included the land of Yehuda. None of them. We went through all of Eretz Yisrael without Eretz Yehuda. So there are those who say that this is how you're supposed to read it. Unitziv echad asher ba'aretz Yehuda. I have one question. I have many questions.
What is it?
Why is the Buddha mentioned here as separate and apart? I mean, it's almost verbose.
No, madam. Oh God, this is going to kill it. You're killing everything I want to say, but I still don't think I'm wrong. I think I can handle it. The country is divided into 12 districts. 12 districts. Now, why does Shlomo have to divide the country into 12 districts that are clearly enunciated here, when there are 12 natural divisions in the country, and he doesn't have to draw a new map? There are 12 tribes. The country is naturally divided into 12 states. Why doesn't he simply have Nasi Lashevet, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun? He creates new zones completely. A redistribution, a rezoning. Go ahead.
One of the reasons was that some of the tribes who were wealthy or economically viable, at the end of the burning, the whole land or the redistributing the 12 areas, he was able to share the wealth
that he wanted.
All right, I knew somebody would say that. Which also is somehow going to impinge on what I want to say, but since it makes sense, so I will accept it. In other words, he redistributed the land in such a way that each one of the zones should be able to carry the financial burden of the taxation.
But if he pays no attention to the original tribal.
Yeah.
Then couldn't the people of various tribes complain that this was their birthright given to them by Moshe, etc.
Unless, of course, is it possible that what Shlomo HaMelech is trying to do, to unite them all and to create an entire new distribution of the land so that it should not be looked upon as tribal? What's the purpose of... I think this is something that we really started. We really started this discussion at the beginning of Shmuel Aleph. During the entire period of the judges, everything that happened according to tribal lines. If Naphtali, if Borah ben Avinom and Devorah of the tribe of Naphtali go to war, so Zvulun did come along with them. There were those who didn't come along with them. If Yehuda goes and fights against the enemies of Israel, so Shimon is going to join him. As you go through all of Sefer Shoftim, there isn't a single Shofet at any point in time who unites all of Israel. All of them, all of their problems, and all of their battles are in a sense localized. It may be a larger locality or a smaller locality, but it's local. During that entire period of some 300 years, since Yehoshua, and maybe the first of the Shoftim, Othniel ben Kenaz, there's nobody else who really becomes Shofet over all of Israel. The first person who becomes accepted by all of Israel, as the Pasuk says, from Dan until Be'er Sheva, is Shmuel. Vayeda, all of Israel, Midan Vav Be'er Sheva knew that Shmuel is Navi Lashem. That therefore gives Shmuel the power and the authority to appoint the first king. There hasn't been anybody since Yehoshua to whom all of Israel will turn or will listen. So the establishment of the kingdom, the first kingdom, which is going to be a short-lived and an aborted one, the kingdom of Shaul. But at least with Shaul, the principle is established. When Shmuel anoints David, it's not only the principle that is established, but what is established now is a royal house, a royal history, continuity. The point of the, and remember, when David becomes king? So the first 7 years he is king where? In Hebron, over Yehuda. It's only after 7 years in Hebron that he comes to Yerushalayim and he becomes king over all of Israel. Are all the tribal divisions down yet? They're beginning to fall. They're beginning to fall, but they have not yet disappeared. What Shlomo is going to have to do is find the means by which to completely, or even more, eradicate, erase, remove the walls. And he does it by establishing 12 districts, 12 zones. We've been living through zones. You remember Ezor Aleph and Ezor Bet and Gimel and Dalet. And Nevuch, what's taken its place is A, B, and C, Kapava of them all. David, Shlomo established 12 zones in Eretz Yisrael. And the 12 zones, pretty clearly, while they may have been centered in one tribe, crossed the boundaries, moved into the boundaries of other tribes. So that what he is doing now is he is taking the steps. First of all, it means that no tribe feels that it alone is ever carrying the burden. The only one that may be carrying the burden alone, because I know what you're going to ask me, you better ask me, what about this 13th one that was Yehuda alone? Yeah, but the line, yes, not by all. Most of them, in other words, it means that it's centered there. But the lines, in other words, it's centered in Yisachar, but it wasn't Yisachar alone. You have to see it in connection with the other. Listen, the question that I asked was a good one. Okay, the fact that he didn't simply appoint 12 tax collectors for 12 tribes would have meant that we don't even have to give you any listing of places. I could have done it in one pasuk. Vayimane HaMelech Shlomo, and this would be a nice pasuk, you understand? Vayimane HaMelech Shlomo, Shneim Osar Nitzivim, Nitziv Echad Lashavet, Nitziv Echad Lashavet. How do you like that? Beautiful. End. End! I don't need the name of a single place. By virtue of the fact that it's all these psukim, the 12 psukim, and it gives you the names of places, means, and I believe that in every case, it moved across geographic borders.
Was God wrong for giving us
Russian? No. No.
Who are we to chase it? Who's wrong with the chase?
I'm with you.
Uh-oh,
we're going to have to give it. So much was made. Yeah, so much was made all the time.
Wait a minute. Let me take your... How many questions can I take over at one time? All right, I'll take you into a statement. So she's going to ask the same question. Mm-hmm. What did we need Shvatim for?
I mean, it was considered so important that women were allowed to inherit just so that they could keep their portion.
All right. In the ultimate, wait a minute. So about women inheriting, just take it easy over here. About women inheriting, so you have to understand that that was only until after the first generation had taken possession of the land. And it says that one of the things that happened on Tu B'Av, what happened on Tu B'Av? A few generations after they had come into Eretz Yisrael and every family had already taken possession of the lands, then the Shvatim, the tribes, were permitted to intermarry. Hutru Shvatim Laval Zebazed. This is the Gemara at the end of the Sechta Tainus that says that the first generation of two, at least, that they were in Eretz Yisrael, they couldn't even be intertribal marriage. You know what kind of marriage that would have been? Intermarriage would have brought a shtickel churban. If somebody from Reuven marries somebody from Zvulun, there's going to be confusion with regard to the possession of the land. So it says that, I know it, you're sitting there and you're thinking, I'm making your kasha even better, right? Okay, good. This is only to catch you off guard. Understand? you'll see. So what it means is, yes. Yeah, but if there were girls and no boys in a family, yeah, so we say, when I say that on Tuba, when the Gemara says that on Tuba, the tribes were permitted to intermarry with one another, it means... but you understood what I meant. Now, in terms of marriage, there was a point reached at which all the barriers came down. That was step one. Ultimately, by the way, if somebody is going to make their way in Yetz Hashem, I hope we do, to the end of Sefer Yechezkel, you're going to see that at the end of Sefer Yechezkel, he's going to describe the last 10 chapters are magnificent chapters, very difficult. The last 10 chapters of Yechezkel, he describes the construction of the third Beit HaMikdash. Just like we're going to have the construction of the first Beit HaMikdash coming up here, he gives us the construction of the third Beit HaMikdash in detail. And not only that, I think it's chapter 47 and 48 where he gives us the division of the land according to the tribes. So I'm making your question even stronger. The tribes each had unique abilities, talents, in a spiritual matter, and this is clearly what Yaakov and Moshe say in their brachas. But these same people, with their different talents and their different temperaments, were the ones who had to learn to live together as one people. In terms of a people, they are one. I mean, if you have 12 people who are each unique in their own right, and they learn how to live together, that's a kingdom. In other words, Shlomo is going to bring down the walls that separate the tribes from an administrative point of view, a political point of view, but never in a way to impinge on their uniqueness. Listen, the Arizal in Kabbalah, they tell us that each one of the tribes had a unique Nusach HaTfilah. Their prayer was unique. And therefore, when Mashiach comes, we're going to learn what each one of the tribes, what the uniqueness of their tefillah was. There may be 12 Sidurim, and then again there may be a Nusach Achid, one unified Nusach of tefillah. But each one had a unique way to serve God. But those inner differences did not have to express themselves outwardly. In order for them to establish their uniqueness, there had to be a period of time in which each tribe lived separately and distinctly in order to develop its own special character. But then that special character had to be able to harmoniously blend with the rest of Israel. When Shlomo is king, then what becomes necessary is l'tashtesh to etagul, to blur the differences, because that's an area where the differences don't apply. Yes. Yeah, but that comes later. That comes much later. I have a feeling, remember the Gemara says that this 13th unnamed Nitziv was in charge of, remember, what happens if there's a leap year and there are 13 months? It said each one was in charge of 1 month. You needed, according to one pshat in the Gemara, you needed one in charge of a leap year. All right. It may also mean, this is my own theory, I have a feeling that there had to be one source that would cover all sorts of expenses, and that great burden was thrust taka on Yehuda, so that nobody should complain that, you know, we're carrying a heavier burden than the king's own shevet. So the king's own shevet had to carry a burden separate and distinct from everybody else's burden. Yes.
Why was so much burden, other than the faith on the self, even than the burden of maintaining the household, which is something that is?
Very good. Very good. No.
Don't blame the women.
That goes back to the first question that was asked. What we're going to find is that Shlomo HaMelech's kingdom is infinitely greater, mightier, more responsible than David's ever was. He is going to enter into relationships with the whole world. In the next chapter, we're going to be told in detail the amount of food that was going to be consumed every day by the household of Shlomo. You're going to read this and you're going to think that all that they're doing all day over there is like the cabinet meetings, you understand. It begins with Berekus at 9 o'clock in the morning, and by when they're killing the budget, it's by 6 o'clock it's steaks and french fries. You're going to get a picture of what might be looked at as absolute opulence. Unless, of course, in the next chapter, we're also going to be told the geographic grasp of Malchus Shlomo. Malchus Shlomo was involved with so many different countries in so many different places in the world that when they tell you the consumption of the house of Shlomo, what it represents is the long arm of the house of Shlomo. There were people coming from all over the world all the time. I mean, we know, how many times do I, we know what goes on over here, what goes on over here from the King David to the President's house. Now they move to the Laron. It's going to be even worse, you're right. What is it? Christopher doesn't like the King David, it's going to be the Laron. Next it's going to be Narmat. All these two chapters are inextricably intertwined. These two chapters are telling us of the necessity for taxation because this is a completely different government. David HaMelech's government in comparison is small, and we're going to be given geographic locations. It's not simply a matter of Shlomo gets up in the morning and him, and we know of two daughters and two sons-in-law that sit down for breakfast. We're talking about delegations coming from an entire world. It's a whole world. I tell you, I am always frustrated over here, but I'm going to take another few minutes to deal with a problem that I've come to it a few times in different connections. In Pasuk 6, it says, Adoniram ben Avda al-Hamas, chapter 4, Pasuk 6, Adoniram ben Avda is al-Hamas. What's this mass? What is this mass? Yeah.
Who calls it forced labor?
Does he quote Farrar?
Chapter 5, verse
3,
and the Rashi.
This seems great. You both, I mean, aren't you both? Okay. That's where I want to take you to chapter 5. Question 27.
First of all, that's for leading you.
Huh?
First of all, that's for leading you.
Leading?
First of all,
that's right. Take a look at chapter 5.
You also
understand. Question 27. I'm going to have to talk quickly. I have important things to say. In chapter 5, Pasuk 27, it says, Vayahu HaMelech Shlomo Mas Mikol Yisrael. Shlomo levied a tax from all of Israel, and the tax was 30,000 men.
And he sent them to Lebanon.
Vayishlachem Lebanona. Let's read the next Pasuk. He sent the 30,000 men to Lebanon. Aseret Alofim Bachodesh Khalifot. The 30,000 men were divided into three groups of 10,000. 1 month, 10,000 men went. Chodesh Iyul b'Levanon, they would be in 1 month in Lebanon, and Shnayim Chadoshim the Beitor, and 2 months at home. Va'Adoniram Ahamas. Adoniram is in charge of this. Okay. No, you went back too quickly. No. You still. I want you to keep a finger over here, as my Rebbe always used to say, keep a finger on the place in chapter 5. Don't get yourself further into the mud. Watch yourself. Now, I'll just tell you the story as it developed. This is who? Kazakhstan or Uzbekistan?
Something happened as a police car.
No, that must be the... this is the president of Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan. They're moving in. They're going to bring it. Didn't we just talk about the Laron? Okay, now this. Yes. All right. Now, we're going to learn Torah despite the HR out there. I'll tell you the story as it was. Okay, it's Chashod. All right, anybody who's listening to this tape, the police are outside. They know I'm here. They're coming for me. Just let Ruth Matar know when they take me. That's all. You know, in the old days, you'd tell my lawyer.
You're not going without us. Just like Ruth Matar, you're not going without us. You're not going without us.
Let them
try to get you without
fear. Yeah, so what? She's protecting me. All right. It was one of those days when I was rabbi in West Hempstead that one of the members of the congregation comes over to me. The shul used to use they always used the Hertz Kumish. They must probably still have the Hertz Kumish. I never used to look too much at the Hertz Kumish, you know, during Kriyas HaTorah. I try and make my way through a Rashi or two, you know. Yeah, it's easier. So he comes over to me. He comes over and he says, Rabbi, take a look at this. Take a look at you see what the Jews are. I'll read to you what Hertz says on Adoniram al-ha-mas, was in charge of mas, a levy, Hebrew, mas, N-A-S. The same word as in Exodus. In Exodus, when it says that the Egyptians enslaved the Jews, they, Vayosinu, all of they placed upon them, Sarei Misim. Now, denoting a body of men set to forced labor for a definite time. Here comes a quote. Here is a quotation from that Hertz brings from a Christian commentator called Farad. You got to hear it to believe it. You have to hear it in order, to see what it is that I'm reacting to. Quote, it was perhaps from his Egyptian father-in-law that Solomon, to his own cost, learned the secret of forced labor. In their Egyptian bondage, the forefathers of Israel had been fatally familiar with the ugly word mas, the labor wrung from them by hard taskmasters.
Uh-oh.
You're right. What an ugly statement. Now, I have a number of questions on this ugly statement. The ugly statement, not only is it ugly, it makes no sense. Number one, let me ask you, would you call slave labor 1 month in Lebanon and 2 months at home? And they were paid? 2 months leave at home. And even when you go out to Lebanon, you go with your telephone. And you order pizza, whatever you want, right?
No Well, you have to
1 month,
to
1 month in Lebanon and 2 months at home. And this is to be compared with the slave forced labor in Mitzrayim. Oh, wait a minute. And then, take a look at something else. Look at the madness of a man creating his own scenario. It was perhaps from his Egyptian father-in-law. In other words, you know what his, the shver has to tell him, you know? Slave labor? That's what you should do. In other words, Shlomo needs the advice of his shver. It's enough he has his daughter. He needs his shver's advice. I mean, this is creating a scenario that is so ugly. If anything, I'll tell you the truth. If I would have been the king of Mitzrayim and Shlomo would be my son-in-law, you know what I would tell him? Or do you know what we suffered from forced labor? Don't ever do it again. I still feel it now. The father-in-law, you understand, a created, fictitious scenario that makes its place into the Chumash. His father-in-law gave him good advice. Beat them down with slave labor. Number three, I hope fascinatingly, the Haftorah, and this is, by the way, the Haftorah for Parshat Truma, it begins one pasuk before 27. It begins chapter 5, pasuk 26. Vashem natan chochmo l'shlomo kasher diber lo. God had given wisdom to Shlomo as he spoke to him, as he said to him. By Yishalom ben Chidom ben Shlomo, there was peace between Chidom and Shlomo. By Yichetu Brit Shneim, they both entered into a treaty. Why at this juncture does the pasuk have to tell us again that God gave wisdom to Shlomo? We're going to go through the next few chapters, and you're going to see a great deal of talk about the wisdom of Shlomo. If with all of his work is one is done with wisdom, with God divinely given wisdom, you're going to tell me that he establishes slave labor because his Egyptian father-in-law told him? That was the advice he got from his Egyptian father-in-law. That's why the pasuk starts with Vashem. Don't forget for a moment, Vashem natan chachma l'shlomo. God gave wisdom to Shlomo. And in the next pasuk, it tells us about the 30,000 men mass. You know what Hertz has done? He's made a mass of the mess, a mess of the mass, a mace of the mass. That's what's happening over here. And that appears over here as it does in Sansino, except that in Sansino, they don't give you this whole phony scenario that he's sitting around there with his father-in-law, his Egyptian father-in-law, Pharaoh, and old Pharaoh tells him, slave labor, good idea, good idea. Arbeit macht frei. I mean, is this what he said? It's bad news. It's very bad news. And it's wrong. It's absolutely wrong. And you have to be able to see that it's wrong.
They're worried about you.
Bela, come here. Come here. Just sit over there.
I just don't want to near a window. I'm sorry
to
interrupt, but
it doesn't make sense. All right. Correct. Except what we're going to have to wait for here is the end of Shlomo's reign. We're going to have to deal with the entire reign of Shlomo as one unit, and then the excesses of the end, the very end of his reign. Here we are talking in the early part of his reign. These people are the ones who are going to build the Beis HaMikdash. Do you know how people saw themselves being part of these 30,000? These were the privileged and the chosen 30,000. The ones who are able to work for the construction. If we would have the opportunity now to work for the construction of the Beis Hamikdash on such terms, do you know the perks that they got? Do I know what kind of pensia they got and the Kupat Cholim and all of the rest? This you're going to call slave labor. This was a schus. Spent 10,000 people spent a month in Lebanon cutting trees. They came back. You see, they're taking, they're just mixing up sukkim and they're creating their own. They're creating scenarios that don't exist. It was perhaps from his Egyptian father-in-law that Solomon, to his own cost, learned the secret of forced labor. I'm sure. If I would go along with this scenario, the Shver would have told him never ever do it. All right.
It was light, relatively
light.
Skilled. No.
Yeah, that's going to be another. There'd be a different group. We're going to see about that also. But I see that, and the only thing is. The best part of the story is when this fellow showed it to me. So he showed it to me because he wanted to show me that you see what Shlomo HaMelech was, you know, and that's going to be, of course, extremely important in everything we talk about, because that terrible mistakes they know. Shlomo HaMelech had 1,000 wives and worshipped idols. Oh God, we have to get a picture of Shlomo HaMelech that is going to be authentic. And here he wanted to show me, this is not an authentic picture, this is a figment of a saint of Yisrael's imagination, and that it made it into Hertz is to me absolutely shocking. Best part of the story is, from the middle of Kriyas HaTorah until it came time to the sermon, I thought of all of this and I changed my whole sermon. And I was able to get up and say, guys, you've got your hurts over there. Take it out now. Take a look at it. And I still had fellows who fought with me after the drasha about it. Now, I have a shtickle homework for you. I have a shtickle homework for you. Very important. You have to read chapter 5 that we're up to. But concurrent with chapter 5, chapter 10. Got it? Because I may be moving between chapter 5 and 10. 5 and 10. Got it? 5 and 10.